Welcome to the Sports Marketing Podcast powered by Fanbase. I'm Chris Sampson. It's been a while, hasn't it? I've always had that little niggle in the back of my mind that I wanted to get back recording these, and I still think there's such a gap for these kinds of chats, no matter how good other sports marketing podcasts are. I hope you'll always take something that's actually actionable away from these podcasts, and this episode will be no different, I hope. It's a little Easter egg for some long-time listeners, as I'm joined by Michael Boko. We co-hosted the Scottish Football Association's football marketing podcast while he was heading up the Scottish FA's digital team, and since then he's been freelancing for some big clients and has been releasing his regular sports marketing newsletter, The Marketing Assist, which you should definitely subscribe to if you don't already. You can find it at michaelbokel.co.uk/newsletter. Let's get into it. There was only one place I was going to come to get fired back up again.
Yes, that's what I like to hear. I'm looking forward to it though.
Nice one. We've got a few bits and pieces to cover off, but I think there's only one place to start, and that's talking about your wee sports marketing baby, the newsletter. It's been 2 years now, I think, you posted recently. What inspired you to start it, and like why did you go down that newsletter route?
Yeah, after obviously we finished the Scottish Football Marketing podcast, and then basically because I was finishing at the Scottish FA, and I went on to a head of marketing role outside of football, and it didn't work out for various reasons. But, you know, at that point when I decided, right, where am I going to go? Because it was my choice to leave, really. And I was like, what am I going to do? And I had a little bit of time to think about it. And I was like, I'm going to try freelance. You know, I'm going to go and bite the bullet and see what it's like. And it was one of the things that it's all fair and well when you're talking about others and trying to market other people, but market yourself. And so I was like, I need to do something that, you know, will give me the opportunity to be in front of people's minds on a regular basis. And I was doing a lot of sort of Twitter activity at the time, various threads and things like that, and didn't want to go down the podcast route. At the time, you were pretty active. There was a lot of sort of other sort of sports marketing podcasts out there. So you know what, I was like, I think the opportunity to do a newsletter, I'd sort of subscribed to a number of different sports marketing business type ones, and they were very sort of high level newsletters talking about the business and various other parts and you know, great resources for information and that. But I just kind of felt there was a wee gap to sort of slide in to take some of the principles we had on the podcast, really, and apply them onto some written form. And really it was, as I say, because I was on that, right, I'm going freelance, I need to generate business, I need to get in front of people, or people to know who, at least know who I am, and that sort of being a regular drop into somebody's inbox, I thought would be quite a good thing to do. And that's how it sort of came together. I spent some time just formulating a plan on what I wanted in that newsletter and how I wanted it to look, and it's changed ever so slightly, subtle changes over that time. But yeah, just over 2 years, I think the 54th one just went out there at the time of recording. So yeah, there's been a labour of love, shall we say. Labour of love.
I think you're absolutely spot on in terms of like what I think for me, it definitely felt like it was different when it started, and it's still different now to what we've probably both subscribed to for some time too. Like, I always feel like some of the stuff in it, it sort of reminds me of the way that some of those conferences are as well, where it's like really, really top level, like you don't really get into the nitty gritty. Whereas definitely like your newsletter is the exact opposite of that. You're always taking something away from it every single time that you send one out. And there's always something that like people haven't seen.
Yeah. And I think that's what I wanted to try and do in terms of you, because as you say, conferences are prime examples. I do come away from that, if it's a good conference, I come away inspired, but sometimes thinking I didn't learn how to do something. I just, you know, and you know, I'm not trying to say that you're going to learn something from every single one, but you know, I try to put that more practical elements in, or then have that bit of inspiration but a bit of that practicalities as well within it. So yeah, no, look, it's gone down pretty well in terms of...
Yeah, I was just going to ask you how it's gone down. Like, I think for me, like, looking from the outside, you get some great reactions off the back of it, but obviously you've got stats in the back end to probably back some of that up too.
Yeah. No, look, open rate's really good. And I think numbers-wise, it's... I'll be quite transparent with this thing. It's just under 1,000 subscribers, which, you know, for 2 years, really only way I've promoted it is via Twitter and LinkedIn, and it's been quite encouraging. You know, it's when you start, you know, got a big hit of people that subscribed. I'm sure a lot of people that listened to the podcast previously and various others, and but over time it's just been really interesting to see the different teams and sports. So we've got quite a big following in the English Premier League now that comes in, and like clubs all throughout the English pyramid, Scotland obviously as well, and then we even got somebody in the NBA. There was a few from Australia, like various sports teams and like high profile sports teams in Australia, and all round. And it sounds quite weird, but it's like, I guess at the times somebody shared it within an office or something, because all of a sudden I maybe get two or three from the same club that sign up at the one time and stuff like that. And that's, you know, that's, it keeps you going as well, because as I say, like I made a conscious decision to do it fortnightly as well, as opposed to doing it on a weekly basis, mainly because I knew, having done the first one, I was like, right, this is going to take a lot of time. And I remembered, like, even doing things like the podcast, you know, how much time it would take and things like that. And yeah, it's one thing I'm glad I did, was do it fortnightly and not a weekly, because then I would feel the pressure every time I wasn't doing it.
I'm definitely going to take that away as a podcast learner too. I mean, we've never been, I think we were maybe weekly for a bit, but definitely, like, less is more sometimes, I think, as well. I think that definitely helps. Would that be one of the things that you maybe take away, or like, if you're looking to give anybody any advice, if they're looking to start something similar, like, I don't know, even I'm thinking of, like, clubs looking at launching newsletters as well, like, is there something that you would advise them on?
Yeah, I think nail down your format and what you're looking to do with it, and have a sort of purpose for it, because I think it's quite easy to get into, it's hard because you don't want to disparage anybody or that, but it's like, how many, you'll know yourself, how many marketing agencies have you seen start a newsletter and then you get like two or three and then it stops, but it's mainly just about talking about themselves. From a club point of view, obviously you've got to talk about yourself. There's going to be, but it's what, understanding what your audience or fan base in this instance wants, and will interact with. Like, I introduced a newsletter at Nairn County, and I'm sure we'll go on to speak about what I've been doing at Nairn and stuff like that. And you're talking Highland League club, it's a small audience in terms of data, like size of database and stuff like that. But I just went and asked, you know, fans, what do you want in these newsletters? What can we tell you that will be of interest? And I think for me, with the sports marketing newsletter, it was a case of, I started off, I did a big section. That section that starts never changed. That four sort of news article or bits of interest have never changed. But I used to do like a themed section in it. And it was like maybe social media, or it was, you know, a focus on a certain team or something. And I ended up stripping that out. The content inspiration's never changed, and the bottom two bits have never changed either, the wee tips and things. And nobody's, I've never announced this publicly or spoke, like said, oh, this is the reason to do it. But if you actually look at the newsletter, it's set up in a 4-4-2 formation. and I kind of landed on that, and I was happy, because I know there's various things out there that it's, people say, oh, the bite size 3-3-1 or whatever it is, but no, I stuck to the football roots and went 4-4-2. But yeah, it's just about tweaking and adapting to find the right sort of, and it sounds a wanky thing to say, but like the right recipe for how it works.
Yeah, nice. And you brought 8 Million Stories on as a sponsor. Like, did you approach them? I know obviously we had Robin on the old podcast, but like, how's that been? And is there some sort of, I don't know, success metrics that you're judging that on as well? Or is it just a very like reciprocal partnership almost.
Yeah, look, for him, I'll let, hopefully he's had some inquiries or whatever. I'm sure that's how they'll be basing their success on the sponsorship. But no, look, the reason I think I did the podcast, that's just now default going back into the old routine there. The newsletter had been going about 18 months by the point that I was like, I actually probably need to get a sponsor for this. And the only reason I got a sponsor for it was never intention to monetize it, but MailChimp changed their costs. So no longer could you have free up to like 2,000 subscribers. So it was coming out of my own pocket, and I was just like, and by that point, you know, change of circumstances and that I was no longer freelancing. So I was like, I just put a call out, you know, about sponsorship within the newsletter. And, you know, I'm very fortunate that Robin at 8 Million Stories got in touch and said, look, I'm more than happy to sponsor. And they've been a sponsor for 6 months. And really was just looking to cover costs rather than make money out of it. So, And the good thing about 8 Million Stories coming on as well is that it's a company that I can actually vouch for and that I've worked with as being a client of theirs, and some really good people there, and I've got a lot of time for Robin, so that definitely helped. I didn't feel like I was selling my soul, put it that way.
Yeah, definitely. I think it adds something to the newsletter as well. Like, I think it's relevant, which makes it kind of perfect as well. Like, you see some of the stuff and it's sort of shoehorned in sometimes in some other newsletters or even other kind of partnerships, but yeah, that one for me like just works perfectly. You mentioned freelancing there. I know, like you said as well, you've sort of moved away from it, but when you left the Scottish FA and then your role after that too, like, you were doing it for quite some time. How did you find it?
Yeah, like, I was starting, it was great. Got off to a great start in terms of clients and worked with some football teams and the Open and did some bits with an agency down in England. And yeah, no, it was great. I found it, I'll be honest though, I found it tough towards the tail end of that first summer and this is genuine, like, I had 5 or 6 different people talking to me at the time saying, I've got work for you, just needing contracts to be signed or a couple of things to land and we'll get it. And nothing happened. And you kind of, it's a weird one, and I learned a lot about myself in that period where, you know, I've always, my career has very much been part of teams and working in organisations of various sizes, but there's always been that sort of support network there and everybody's got each other's back, and I kind of felt, bloody hell, I'm kind of on my own here. Well, I am on my own here, and I was, it kind of chipped a little bit away at my confidence, if truth be told, as well, is that because you're not getting the work in and stuff like that, and obviously that is you're looking to pay the bills, you've got mortgages, or I had mortgage and a wee girl and stuff like that, and it was, I started finding it a wee bit tough, and then more work came in, and then you're like, right, okay, pressure's off a little bit, and that's fine. And you know, that contract, I got a contract in with the Glasgow International Comedy Festival, they had just relaunched the festival under new operators, and I did 6 months with them for the 2020 up to the 2023 festival, and then got offered that full time, and kind of was a no-brainer at the time in terms of that bit of security, changing personal circumstances and things like that, and it was like, great, I'll go and do that. But no, look, I enjoyed many aspects of it, you know, had some, opened up a few conversations and introductions to a lot of people, and it made me appreciate a lot of things as well, and made me realize, you know, what do I like and how do I like working, and my heart goes off to those that do it, and I know loads of people, you know, really enjoy it. Some, you know, do freelance and go into the back into sort of more permanent secured jobs, or sort of secured as they can be nowadays, and others then go back to it and things like that, and everybody finds their sort of thing for it. I think the one thing about being freelancers, you definitely have to find what it is you and be clear and transparent on what your actually services are and what you offer, and if you can specialize, definitely in that focus. Because if I'm, again, honest with myself looking back, I'm like, what was like, I do still some consultancy on the side and stuff like that, and I think that's what I think that consultancy side I kind of enjoy and things like that. But yeah, it was tough, because at times you're like going back into the weeds and going very hands-on and doing some, and I said, no, again, I don't want to sound disrespectful or anything, but I was like, I feel like I'm doing a work here that is taking me back a few years, because I'm just doing some fundamental groundwork where, and that was like, and I knew it's the first year of being freelancer as well. You have to go and do this stuff. You have to roll up your sleeves and earn your stripes and do all that. And again, you know, knew it was going to be hard work, but maybe didn't really appreciate how I would react to certain situations in terms of, you know, work not coming in as regularly as it may have. And, you know, went into that freelance thing with no one read and plenty to say, make sure you've got some money tucked away for those sort of quieter months, which I did. And I'm glad I did that. But yeah, a long way of saying it was a learning curve that I did enjoy it at times, but definitely learned a lot more about where I thrive more in a working capacity.
I talked to Scott Goodacre at the Online Grill quite a lot about it, because he's obviously been in that position for a good few years now too. And I think he is definitely one of those ones that, like you've just said, like, he really has carved out an area for himself now too, especially from, we've worked with him at Saints, and I know he's done some stuff with some other Premier League clubs now as well. But like, not just in that sense, but he also does some non-football work and like through like kind of colleges and teaching and that kind of thing. Like, he's sort of, it's not really a niche. I feel like saying niche is a harsh thing in that respect, but it's like he's carved out that area for himself. I think I would totally be in a similar position to how you were feeling, in terms of like, yeah, I feel like I'm sort of like a generalist almost, and I'd just be going in and it's like, okay, well, I'm here now, like, let's do some marketing, almost, like, totally being, I think it's just, I don't know, I always have that in the back of my head, that little niggle, it's like, oh, maybe I could try it for a little bit, but then, yeah, I'm not sure, it's maybe pushed down a bit further.
No, I've no regrets about doing it, that's for sure, and I'm fortunate that, you know, I've come out of it with a permanent job working on something exciting like the festival, which has got a lot of similarities to sport. But yeah, no, it's obviously not what we came on this podcast to talk about, but but yeah, no, good for it. If anybody's listening that's thinking about it, is just there'll be some people listening that'll be really good at it, and some that maybe, you know, need to prepare themselves a little bit more. That's just from my experience, so I speak to a lot more people than just listening to what I've just said there.
What was one of the best things you were like involved in when you were freelancing?
I mean, I got to work a little bit at the time that the Open was going through ahead of the 150th, and, you know, I was just plugging a gap for the team there. But yeah, to work on something like the Open's really special, and feel very privileged to have been able to do some digital work on that.
The Sports Marketing Podcast is now powered by Fanbase. Fanbase is now one of the fastest growing sports technologies in the UK and Europe. They work with leagues, teams, and now athletes to provide an off-the-shelf platform to run your back office teams. Their first product, Fanbase Commerce, allows any team to set up their box office and mobile ticketing, VIP hospitality and subscriptions at the same time, whilst unifying your first party data and giving sports organisations and athletes the control of that data. Fanbase will be announcing new products with us throughout the course of this podcast series, so stay tuned to hear what's next. It's great to have them powering the pod, and you can listen back to the episode that featured founders Ali and Michael if you missed it when it was released.
I think that probably takes us on to talking about some football
in a marketing sense. It has almost been 3 years since we stopped the podcast, which feels very strange to say that. Do you think there's been any big changes in the Scottish sports and football marketing industry in that time?
Not sure if big is the right word. There's definitely been changes. I think there's definitely been improvements at some clubs anyway. I think I've definitely seen certain clubs an investment in talent, you know, experienced talent or different types of roles. Aberdeen being one. I know Hearts have increased sort of investment in that marketing side, and I think just recently appointed Robert Borthwick, obviously, as well in that role, in a sort of content role there that perhaps they didn't have before, or have a specialised role for that sort of thing. So I think there's definitely been that side. Don't get me wrong, there's some other clubs you look at and they've maybe scaled things back or gone down a cheaper route in terms of talent-wise, but who are still managing to do a good job. But yeah, and also I think there's been an increased focus on fan experience, maybe. Again, at certain clubs, not all clubs, but there's definitely, again, Aberdeen being a prime example there of one that has gone out quite a bit to really make some decent strides there.
I think one thing that jumps out to me is like the video element. Like we said it so much when we were on the podcast, and even in my time when I did it before, after we'd stopped as well, and it still felt like it hadn't quite broken through that this was going to be the biggest thing. But now you've got so many clubs sort of invested in that side too, and you mentioned Hearts, obviously. Is it just Jordan was there before, and now he's come down to Bristol City, and then I think Ewan, who was at Partick Thistle, went to Hearts to replace him. So it's like clubs like Hearts, I think some of the other clubs in the Premiership as well, like put a big focus behind that. Obviously, still Motherwell in that space as well. Like for me, that's one of the biggest things that probably has changed. But again, in some other club examples, like probably still could put a little bit more resource behind that and really show off either that match day experience, either the on pitch stuff, or getting more time with players as well. Like I feel like still we don't know enough about the players that play in Scottish football, and you want to know more. You want to hear more of their stories as well. So, yeah, I think for me, yeah, like you said, maybe not drastic or big changes, but there's definitely been some changes. But I still feel like there's such a long way to go as well for some of the stuff to tick so many more boxes. But it just comes down to resource, doesn't it, at the end of the day?
I think resource is the big thing, and I think you touch on video there, and you know, video's still got a very important part to play. I think it then comes down to your audience. With that is where, I mean, when we were doing the podcast, it didn't take much. That's going to be completely the wrong phrase. But you know, if you were a club that created some really good content, it would get cut through amongst wider outside your own club, and sometimes further afield. But I think there's so much good content now that if you're doing content with the hope that you're going to get cut through amongst fans of other clubs or get that wider exposure, it's not as easy now unless it's something extraordinarily good. And obviously it's a Scottish sports podcast, but example of like Norwich City, for example, in their suicide awareness video and things like that. It takes something really special to do that. But then, let's be honest, there is objectives there. You've got commercial objectives, and you want to be able to back up to help attract sponsors with, you know, we've got X amount of digital reach and engagement and whatever else. But it comes back down to understanding what your immediate audience and fan base are wanting first off, and then, you know, how you do things beyond that. But I mean, 3 years ago, there was still club TV was still quite a big thing because the nature of it had to be like that as well. And you know, some clubs have continued it to an extent, some haven't, and how people view content and how clubs are producing it and where they're putting it, that's all changed obviously massively since we even started the podcast, which go back another 3 years beyond that, maybe. So
2017.
So then four years, before that. So, you know, it's been a massive cyclical change in terms of, you know, what people expect, you know, what people are putting out, and what sort of direction things have gone through. I mean, when we started the podcast, we didn't talk about TikTok.
Yeah, you know, that's just a bit.
There was short form content, then there was longer form content, but you know, there was it was either short or it was long. It wasn't like crossing so as much as what it is now. So yeah, things change and audience needs change and wants change, and it's again just it always goes back to understanding what your audience wants and who your audience is.
I think when you left Scottish FA, you wrote a piece for Sports Marketing Scotland website, which is basically a dead website these days, but it's still one of the most recent pieces that's been up there, which was in April 2021, would you believe? And you kind of had a bit of an opinion piece around things that you maybe wanted to see. I'm not sure if you can remember everything that went in there, but I think I looked back on it recently, and there's
actually read it before I came back or I came on this. Okay. Just to remind, some things have aged, okay, some not as much, but it's just the nature of opinion pieces, I suppose.
So, like, the one thing that I think has changed is the dual ownership rules, which I thought reading back on it now was quite out there for you to add that in there.
It was, and I think with the example is probably not a good example in there, to be honest. But yeah, I know it's been quite a divisive thing to go into that's happened of late, and I completely understand people's reservations about it and club identity being impacted. And I mean, I think I'm hoping that the product is strong enough up here and the fan culture is strong enough up here that a bit of dual ownership, unless, don't get me wrong, bloody Red Bull or somebody comes in and tries to make it Red Bull Dundee or whoever, you know. but, you know, if at the level that has been, what is it, Burnley and Bournemouth are the sort of two of late sort of thing have been mentioned or going through. So it's, I think, players' investment, I don't think it can be a bad thing. I know there'll be people say that it's limiting the chances for Scottish talent to come through, but you know, it's
already limited.
I mean, yeah, look, we're not here to talk about player development on this podcast, so no. I'll leave that to the expertise of ours. But look, I think it's we bang this drum about trying different things in Scottish football, and yeah, let's see how it works out. And I'll happily admit if I'm wrong that this doesn't work, but hoping that, you know, the clubs that are seeing it see the benefits of it.
We're still not trying alcohol in Scottish football.
Oh man,
still a sticking point for you.
Massively, and I think more now because I am involved at my hometown club in Nairn County, and who play in the Highland League, and you can't get a beer at the game because of something that happened in 1980. I think I've spoke about this before on other things, and there'll be people saying, "Oh, I mean, if you can't go 90 minutes without a beer, what's the point?" Sort of thing, you know. It's not about that at all. No. And it's like, for some people, that 90 minutes is their one escape at the weekend to go. So if you want to go with your mates, have a couple of beers. I look at it selfishly from a club point of view and the revenue that we could generate. I think there's examples down south of clubs that make a lot of money. And it's one of their biggest incomes for some clubs in terms of beer sales on match days and stuff like that. And I just... it's hard to watch like other leagues and whatever else happening, but in Scottish football, there's not a public conversation going on about it. I think there's obviously things going on behind closed doors, but I just, we're now 44 years down the line or whatever it is, and we're still no closer, it feels, in a club like Nairn County and everybody else in the Highland League and Lowland League, and you could argue League 2 and anything below, are missing out, really. Missing out on revenue. And we talk about money in the game and improving fan experience and everything else. And, it's one I could sit here and bang the drum on, and I've always thought, should I just be one of these people that start a campaign and see how far we can take it? But it's not been on the priority list at the moment.
Maybe one day. Yeah. I think, like, coming down here and obviously working in English football now, like, it has probably opened my eyes a bit more, not just from having alcohol at football perspective, but it comes back to me around that whole experience of the match day. Like, Saints do everything that we possibly can to encourage fans, families, individuals to get to St Mary's as early as possible on a match day, have them in and around the stadium. Like, and it's not just like a beverage perspective, it's that food element too. Like, I think that comes down to it for me. Like, there's now like different food vans outside the stadium every single match day, and that rotates around some stuff. They've got like little stalls within the concourse themselves too, so like a local brewery comes in and has got a little stall set up. Like, there's a local food stand that's got a stall set up within the concourse as well. So like, it's that whole experience of bringing the whole food and beverage side up rather than just scotch pie, steak pie, Bovril and a soft drink.
Yeah, don't get wrong, I think there's still a place for a pie in Scottish football, and that's not going away.
Oh, 100%. I'm not knocking pies, absolutely.
I get what you're saying, but... and I think it's interesting because you mentioned there like local food stall and stuff like that. Do that in isolation and you're not going to get a lot of people coming early just for that. But you join it all together and do all the different elements and the chance to get a beer and anything else that goes with that, then it's brilliant. And you start to see a little bit more in Scottish football in terms of the food offering. I've definitely seen over the last few years, I think, things like Footy Scran, Twitter page and whatever else helped push that a little bit forward. And hopefully we continue to see some more things. But again, I understand that, especially at a lower league level, but having experience of at Nairn County and its capabilities and whatever else, because I've certainly been banging the drum to try and diversify some of the product offering we've got. I think the farthest we got was a pie and a donut. So, it's not, there's definitely the challenges at that, but look at a bigger level, you're certainly seeing more examples of that side of things. And I think that tie into local as well is a big thing that you see some clubs do really well, but others always, I think, scope for more.
Do you think one of the sort of smallest points that he talks about in the article was asking the fans, but do you think we still do enough of that in Scottish football? Are they involved as much as they should be, or even to a certain extent, are they involved more or less than what they were back then when you wrote it as well?
I think they're more involved more, or they're getting asked opinions more at club level. I've seen more clubs do surveys and sort of activity with fans to get fan opinion, etc. At the top level of the game, no, I think I think fan movement definitely has still a lot of sway and a lot of power. We've seen that with the ill-fated Conference League. There was a lot of fans that shouted about that and kicked up, the fast out a little bit about their opinions and put pressure on their clubs or other clubs that were against it, and then that helped put pressure on other clubs to ask their fans, and we started seeing more of that ask fans their opinions, and I think I'd like to see more that from you know, the decision makers and various others on topics about whatever it may be that they ask the fan opinion, to take that into account without just decisions being made at whatever club level or whatever level it is being made without that sort of fan input.
I think fans comes into probably the last 2 points then from your article. I think the first one is who's selling our game, and then the second one was what if money is ring-fenced to allow us to promote our game in the right way. Like, I think, in my opinion, fans seem to know how that should be done, but I'm not sure if the powers that be in Scottish football have really cottoned on to that yet. However, we did get Scottish football marketing become a thing over the past, I think it's been a year, maybe just over a year now. It's still in its infancy. I was certainly excited when it got announced, but I don't know, in my opinion, yes, still early days, but it looks like it's focusing much more on the commercial side rather than, I would say, traditional marketing. Like, would you like to see any difference there? I think linking back to those 2 points in terms of who is selling the game and how are they promoting it?
Yeah, look, I've always been a big advocate of having a centralised marketing arm that sits maybe outside the governing body, so sits outside under the umbrella, but definitely, you know, has its own autonomy outside the Scottish FA and SPFL. And yeah, with Scottish football marketing, I think, as you say, it's definitely got a commercial focus at the moment in time, and I'm hoping again that once they get a few more deals under the belt, that more money comes into the game, that allows for more investment, and then we start seeing that investment into marketing that will help clubs. And I think that was what I said in the article, it was about helping clubs at all levels of the game, whether it's, you know, outside the SPFL. I could get on my soapbox about the Highland League and how they don't market or do anything of note as a league, but then the Lowland League do a bit more and definitely have as much as you can have opinion on. There's some of their decision making around various other elements of the game. You know, they've got a clear identity in terms of, or I like their identity in terms of their general aesthetic of their branding and their social activity. But, you know, leagues below, East of Scotland, go into the women's game, and there's plenty of scope and clubs and various other people that would benefit massively from shared resource and expertise. And I just hope that we can get to that point where we can get into providing actual marketing services to clubs and leagues who need it and will benefit from it.
Yeah, it's a dream, definitely. I think we talk about fans, but then even, obviously, still class ourselves as fans, but there's definitely been some sort of chats that I've had with people involved in clubs or people that have been involved in clubs or even just fans that want to attempt to make a difference too. I think there's always sort of something bubbling under the surface that doesn't quite prop its head up and be like, look, we're actually going to try and make some sort of change. But yeah, I think we'll see what happens with that one. I get frustrated, but you can see both sides. Like, absolutely, it needs that resource. I think I mentioned it, we were recording this, and I think earlier on this week, like, Dundee went out with their volunteer marketing position, and like, I just went out with a post on Twitter, and I was like, I see both sides of this. Like, people are going to do that because there's always going to be somebody that wants to do it, but more focus, more attention, more money needs to go into Scottish football, but also the marketing of Scottish football to make it much more of like a viable position for clubs to go out with.
Yeah, I think it's tough, and I think, without dwelling on the Dundee example, because at Nairn County, for example, who's entirely run by volunteers, and we've put out calls for volunteers before and had some response about, you know, you shouldn't be relying on volunteers, but just unfortunately, just the nature it is. I willingly give up my time for Nuneaton County and don't ask for anything really in back. But you know, a full time Premiership club asking for a full time social media intern unpaid is, it's not a good look, shall we say. And no. I'll probably just leave it at that.
Yeah, let's move on. You've mentioned Nairn quite a bit already, and obviously when we did the podcast before, we always tried to aim at being like accessible to every level of football. Like, what is one thing that you'd recommend like lower league clubs at the moment like focus on the most from your experience in Nairn and from obviously everything you've been had experience in your career so far?
Look, I think it's basic fundamental of communication with fans. I think being as open and as transparent and regular with your communication is still fundamental. I think there's clubs, again, we always try to avoid calling out the bad example, so I won't name any names, but I think you could look at just about every division. A club in every division in the men's game in Scotland who you would call as a bad example, you know, of hiding, not telling fans what's going on, bit cloak and dagger, you know, not being as transparent, etc. But then there's other examples of clubs that are being very open or trying to, you know, make big changes. I think, you know, the obvious one being Raith Rovers being the latest example of a club that has been very different in their approach to communicating with fans, and I think that no matter what level you're at, you can always try to do more. I think at Nairn County it's interesting in terms of how I've learnt about, you know, where prioritising time when it's not a full-time job, although sometimes felt like one at times, but because, I mean, being a volunteer, all these ideas and experiences of, you know, working in the Scottish FA and, you know, try to practice what we preached a lot on the podcast as well, and realizing you can't actually do everything that you want when you're volunteering at a part-time non-league club especially, but then focusing on things that have a big impact. I mean, I introduced regular email marketing, and probably if there's any Nairn County fans listening to this, I'll go, I think I've only had like 2 emails this year so far. And like, yeah, it's because real life gets in the way. And that's just obviously the nature of it if you don't have the bodies to do that. But we introduced the official club podcast, which probably comes as no surprise that we did a podcast. But again, good, was regular monthly for a while. And then that's kind of tailed off a little bit just because. But just trying to find other ways of how we're communicating. And, you know, we were touched on, you know, the Conference League earlier, but we were one of the first clubs to make a stance about it publicly. And we had engaged with some of our fans, you know, didn't try to make it public at that point because we very much broke rank and got our knuckles wrapped for doing that by the league and stuff like that. But you know, we sounded out fans and got a feeling amongst our supporters to know like this wasn't a thing that our fans wanted. So we felt we were in a position that we had to, you know, be open and honest with our fans and communicate with our fans that we are against it, and despite what you think, we're not going to just roll over and go with the vote sort of thing. So, you know, and that's a bigger issue, obviously, and that's an obvious one that you feel that you have to go and do, but try to be open with lots of things about whether it's, you know, changes to the ground or, you know, what's going on at the club in general, like a sort of behind the scenes look. And again, you always want to do more, but it's one thing. You know, I think, going back to that original question, which I seem to be falling into that old habit again of the old podcast of just going on chatting about stuff, but is really just, try and, if you can do anything, just speak to your fans, keep them updated and find the right channels. It's about finding you know, where understanding where your audience is. Not everybody's on social media, you know, and not everybody will read emails, but it's sometimes you just got to prioritize what it is and try and get your information out there.
We said that a lot when I remember we were doing the podcast as well. Like, yes, the irony was not lost on us recording a podcast and then promoting it on social media that not everybody was on social media, but from a club perspective, like somewhere like Nairn, and obviously from my experience, somewhere like Greenock Morton, it's like that community surrounding the club is so kind of close knit and tight around the club as well that you've got to try and get out there and touch kind of as many of those points as possible, and not just focus on posting on Twitter, not just focusing on email. Like, you need to be that sort of Swiss Army knife, but it is so difficult with volunteers, people that are one person sometimes in a role as well. Yeah, definitely a tricky thing. Like, I struggled to cope with being so far away when I was on the MCT board. Like, I guess, how do you find that in terms of where you're situated and being so far away from Nairn as well?
Yeah, look, it's tough. I think, as I said, you know, you go into it and you have all these ideas and you want to change the world, or you want to, for me, you know, improve what we're doing. The people that were doing stuff there before had done some great stuff. But for me, it was, how do I raise the profile of the club? How do we, you know, get more eyes on the club, hopefully more money coming in via sponsors and that, but essentially more fans coming through the gate. And but realizing even the smallest ideas, especially ones that were maybe on match day or needed somebody to be there owning it. And when I live 3.5 hours away and not at every game, in fact, at a handful of games, home games a season, it's difficult, and I still find it tough, to be honest. I'll still have all these mad ideas and want to do stuff and pitch them, and it's like just hoping deep down that somebody goes, right, no, I'll take that on. But everybody's just got so much else on their plate at the club that it's like you're not going to get that. So, yeah, no, it's fine. I think had it not been Nairn County, you know, if it wasn't my hometown club and something I feel passionate about, I think I would have probably not be still doing it, it's because it's Nairn. You know, I've enjoyed being involved. As I say, frustration at times, but when things have come together, it's been good to see the fruits of that labour and see the results that come off the back of it.
I definitely feel that as well. Like, it took so much for me to make that decision to step away from MCT and not be as involved. And even now, like, seeing some of the stuff, obviously Dale, who was at Ross County before they went to Morecambe and then now is at Morton, like, it's been a breath of fresh air, him coming in. And even for me now being on the outside of that, it's not quite FOMO, but it's sort of like, oh, we're actually doing some stuff, and it's things are moving forward. Like, it's still a surprise, but it's great to see, definitely. And you've definitely, well, from my perspective anyway, looking from the outside looking in and speaking to you so often over the years, like, there's definitely been a noticeable growth in some of those key areas at Nairn too. Like, is there any one area that you wanted to kind of call out? Or is it a pie and a donut?
Ha ha, you know, that we didn't even come up with that idea. Pie and a roll, yeah, that happened. And look, I think somebody had a the usual Twitter jibe at us about pie and a roll, saying we didn't invent, like, oh, look at you trying to claim to invent it. And at no point have we ever tried to claim we invented a pie and a roll, because obviously Alawa and various others have done it. It's like pie and a roll's a thing that's been around since the dawn of man, it seems, in Scotland. But, you know, we marketed it. It just happened that it tied in nicely with Footy Scran being on the app and things like that. But, and then the Pine of Donut actually happened because a guy, we didn't run out of rolls, and it was a charity football game, and a guy went up to the pie hut and was like, oh, can I get a pie and a roll? Don't have any rolls left. And he saw that we were selling donuts. He goes, can I get it in a donut then? And they were like, yeah, sure, why not? Took a photo of it, and then it obviously went nuts, and you know, Gordon Duncan speaking about it on Clyde One and whatever else. But no, the pie and the donut's not what I take most pride in, because it wasn't mine. I think there's been so much done, but we've had record shirt sales, so we got our shirt cycles on every two seasons, so we don't change it every season. But for our free kits, over the course of 2022 going into this season, and it'll finish up at the end of the season, we're a high league team, technically we don't need a third shirt, but we've got a charity one, and between the three shirts, they all focus on a different element in there. The home shirt features the bandstand on, which is like a iconic Nairn feature, if you know Nairn, a landmark. The away shirt has every street name from the IV12 postcode, which is a Nairn postcode, on it. And then the third shirt was a charity third shirt for Team Hamish, which is a local Nairn charity, which got a really heartbreaking story and shameless plug, but I did do a podcast series on market in Nairn County a couple of summers, a year and a half ago or something. Maybe I'll maybe look at a season two this year, but a series two. I'm going very American there. But yeah, no, shirt sales have been incredible. We've raised some money for Team Hamish as well, and the profile of it all has been brilliant. I mean, attendances are up. We've engaged more with the local community, and you know, investment from sponsors, and it's definitely, we've caught a bit of the imagination at times within town. It's, I mean, don't get me wrong, we changed our manager about a year and a half ago, just under a year and a half ago, and that's coincided with results picking up, apart from last night as we record this, a disappointing home defeat. But you know, we won a cup, and so I'm under no illusions what we're just doing on the pitch, but I'd like to say record shirt sales before we won the cup. But you know, it's been great from that, and you see it, and it's good. And as I say, look, there's a lot more we want to do, and there's some fun stuff that we do, and like being able to release a Nairn County Christmas jumper, for example, is you know, something I probably didn't expect, but it's just random ideas that they can do and bring to life and things like that, and see people buying them and wearing them and stuff like that. It's great, and you know, as I say, plenty of ideas still there, but so some big projects actually happening up over the summer. But it's definitely seeing growth and noticing some projects. So again, realize you asked me about one thing, and I've mentioned several there, but there's just so much going, they're trying to do so much of the club, and it is a very special club. And I think anybody, even if you're not a fan of Nairn County, but come visit Station Park, you sense that as soon as you go into the place. And yeah, very proud to be able to be involved with the club.
Now, the kits, like you mentioned, definitely stood out for me. Obviously, there was a little bit of a Morton connection there. I think you got Gavin to design the... Was it the third one? It was the third one, wasn't it, they designed?
Gavin designed the home and the third one.
The home and the third, okay.
A long story short, for anybody wondering who Gavin and who we're talking about is, when I got involved, I was like, I need somebody to design kits, because I want to go custom, and spoke to Chris. I was like, do you know anybody that designs kits? And you mentioned Gavin, who's a Morton fan, and ended up speaking to him, and great guy. He was just designing kits, still does design kits in his spare time and things like that. But I remember I gave him the brief for the Team Hamish one, so our third kit, which if anybody's not seen it, the only way I can describe it is it's like a very colourful rainbow chevron pattern on the front. And I gave him the brief because the whole premise of Team Hamish was started because the young boy Hamish died of leukemia, and his parents wanted to fundraise for to build a splash park down at Nairn Beach. And before the splash park officially opened, his mum passed away as well. So I mean, massive toll on that family, and unbelievable, but still was committed to creating that legacy. And so basically showed them pictures of the splash park, the website, etc. And he went and dug out this picture of the mum and she was wearing this very bright coloured chevron style dress. Turned out to be her favourite dress, and used that as inspiration, and absolutely won. I've seen it. Didn't even ask for any changes on it. It was unbelievable. Like, and usually I'm quite fussy with these sort of things, and anybody that's worked with me would know that. But absolutely nailed it. So yeah, hence why, you know, it's helped contribute to record shirt sales.
Nice cracking shirt, and I think the story obviously just makes it as well, definitely. Final three, which I'm bringing back, was a thing that we did before, if anybody is still listening from way back then as well. But what advice have you got for anyone looking to make that break into sport? Like, I know you've gone through a bit of stuff already throughout the podcast, but yeah, can you narrow anything down?
It's funny, I knew you were going to ask this, so I was like, what is it? I've got some standard answers that I always give for this, but one of the things I've learned over the last while, and you know, it's going to be such an old man thing to say, but it's like, and I'm definitely getting a little older, is especially if you're younger and you're wanting to get into sport, understand that it is not easy. It took me and you very long time to get into sport, but be willing to put that effort in. It is not easy. You need to graft a little bit. You need to roll up the sleeves and persevere with it, and be tenacious. But you need to understand that it's not going to be handed to you unless you're very fortunate or got a very rich dad who happens to be a sponsor or something. But you know, on top of that, go and volunteer. I always say go and read, listen, absorb all the knowledge and information you can, because if you don't have the experience, at least have some knowledge. It'll definitely help with conversations. You know, you're trying to build those connections and networking, and volunteer is the way to build those contacts and give you ins to things or be able to speak to people. And if you can't volunteer, I always say this as well, is have a wee side project. You know, whether it's a wee website, podcast, TikTok channel, you know, whatever it is you want to do, you know, we e-commerce businesses, I don't know, but have something that if you don't have the experiences within sport that you can lean on to go, I've got this sport side project that does X, Y, and Z, I've learned this, you know, I know how to do this and that by doing this, it'll go a long way as well. Because when you are putting your CV in for a job, and again, don't want to come across as disrespectful or anything, but I've viewed CVs for entry-level jobs or junior jobs before, and if your only experience is Sainsbury's or Marks and Spencer's, you're not going to stand out. But those are the ones that are the side projects that were willing to, you know, in their own time, put in a bit of graft and a bit of, you know, effort to try and do something, you're going to stand out massively.
Yeah, totally agree with that. I think, come back to your first point, football, and we've sort of roles reversed, like since we went, since we were on the podcast before, I was outside of football, you were inside it. Now roles are reversed, like being on this side of the fence now, like relentless is the one word we said, like we spoke about it before we came on, but yeah, it's just that constant nature of it. But absolutely, like side project can absolutely vouch for that. Like Sports Marketing Scotland definitely helped me when I was applying to get the job at Southampton. Like it's something you can talk about. It's something that you can get experience in. Like speaking to you, like even just having Scottish Football Association podcast co-host like on a CV, like it goes such a long way. When you're trying to make a break into an industry that you've always wanted to work in. So, yeah, can definitely vouch for those things. One club, organisation, or, like, sport in general that's got your attention right now?
I mentioned them before, but Aberdeen. It might not be happening too much for them on the pitch this season, but I just think what they're doing in terms of fan experience and trying to engage even like younger fans, for example, is brilliant. You know, they've obviously got a strategy in place there. They're investing in it. They're committed to doing it. And I think the team up there, that are behind the scenes working on that, have done some great stuff. I think their junior Aberdeen A and things like their signing sessions are brilliant. You know, I know they've done stuff with fan zones, the whole red shed and what they've been doing there in general communication with fans. And I think even recently they've hired a dedicated member of staff when it comes to that sort of fan experience side of things as well. So yeah, if I have to shout out one, that would definitely be Aberdeen.
Ah, nice. I mean, I never saw Alan going there. Like, when obviously we spoke to Alan on the podcast, felt like he was so entrenched at Motherwell and everything that they did. But like, for him to move up there and like make that difference as well onto a team that was already doing some incredible stuff off the pitch.
Like, I think it'd be a discredit to the team that's already there that had put in a lot of that hard work before. But no, I completely get your point. I'm completely sure that Alan's been very, you know, encouraging and pushing that agenda as well. But the seeds
of that, it's probably helped him as well to just go in and like have that set team with Scott as well, obviously leading stuff there too.
Well, yeah. We had Scott Gormall on the Scottish Football Marketing podcast years ago talking about, you know, some of the Aberdeen DNA and the things that they've been doing there. So it's just great to see that they've managed to continue doing it and grow it and seeing the results, which at the bottom line is what you need to, and fundamentals of it all is what you need to see when you're doing this sort of activity. So no, it's been great. And yeah, I definitely keep an eye a lot closer now on what Aberdeen are doing, because they're a good example in Scottish football.
And then they've got a one-stop quote machine in charge as well for the rest of the season as well. So I'm sure that'll help some social media stats along the way for the rest of the season. Final question. We just ticked over an hour, so we're almost there. If anybody is still listening, I'm out of the game, Michael. Who should I be getting next on the podcast?
If you're out of the game, I'm definitely out of the game. But no, I think we talked about, I think it'd be very worth speaking to Scott if he's got the time up at Aberdeen to get a deep dive into the Aberdeen side. I think what they've been doing is great. I think you could definitely, and I know you're probably on your list already because I know you're a wee bit of a fanboy at the moment, is Raith Rovers and speaking to somebody like Andy Barrowman. But always good to get, I think, try and hear people that have worked in Scottish football that are maybe not in Scottish football at the moment, but down south. And, you know, my old boss, Greg Mailer, got a lot of time for Greg, and he talks a lot of great stuff and his experiences at Brentford and what he's seen in firsthand, I'm sure would be of great value to Towers. I think, you know, Marcus Nash, who another previous podcast guest at Ipswich, and I'm sure he's, you know, now seeing both sides of the fence and things like that. And if you probably want a non-football example, Connor Wells, Southampton alumni, at the Open, and, you know, different level, obviously, with the Open. But again, doing some great stuff over there in St Andrews, and well worth a conversation.
Definitely. Okay. Definitely a few of those on my list already. But yeah, I think it would be a lovely circle if Greg came on, given that first like traditional old style written interview on Sports Marketing Scotland website was with Greg, which started it all off as well. So yeah, that'd be cracking to have to do. Well, it's been an hour. We should probably head off. I think. Who knows how to end podcasts these days, but I appreciated your time, Michael. Thanks so much for coming on, and it's been great chatting to you again. And obviously, yeah, well, in this setting, like, WhatsApp's not the same really when you're chatting in person, but nah, been cracking having you on. Thanks so much.
No, that's been an hour of rambling once again, but no, it's a pleasure with coming on. It's funny because, you know, don't currently work in football, but the chance to be able to speak about, you know, or do work in sport, you know, to be able to speak about football market and sports market again. And yeah, it's funny how the things that you miss working on the other side of things at times as well. And definitely given me the appetite to do some more.
Love it. Well, we'll leave it there, but thanks so much for listening, and hopefully see you again soon.